Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Monday, March 20th. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, joined by Pete Sampson of The Athletic. It was a busy week for Notre Dame. Of course, we're going to spring practice starts on Wednesday. We're going to talk about that extensively, of course, but Notre Dame had their pot of gold distributions for the 2025 recruits. Notre Dame women's hoops make it to the Sweet 16 once again without a couple of their best players. They're doing a heck of a job. We're going to get into the Notre Dame men's basketball coaching search, but I want to start with spring with an opening on Wednesday, the first of 15 practices. Tim O'Malley, you put out a story yesterday, minimum of 7 questions. There are many, many more than that, but I thought you did a really nice job of previewing what's to come on Wednesday.
Yeah, really, my number one question is who's out? We heard about it in December, and they are at 93 scholarships. We don't believe it's a problem because we believe some players won't be on the team. But my guess, and Tim, you alluded to it on our message board, is a couple of the players, at least one, we would all agree that we were told there was no room for, is going to be able to be on the team. I think they need a few of these guys, but who's not playing, who's out temporarily is always a big deal for spring. We know the shoulder guys. I'm not sure everybody knows this, but like other than Adon Schuler, who we of course talk about as a freshman out, like Thomas Harper is in the pit with a shoulder injury. Cam Hart, people recall that's his third in 4 years. The ACL guys, Bauman and Raridan, I wonder how much you get out of them. Bauman was September, Raridan was October, so I think those are probably August guys, right? You would see. I want to see Rico Flores run, because if he really had a talus fracture in November, it's hard to be as far ahead as he says he is. He also said it might have been a sprain. We're asking a 17-year-old, 18-year-old to tell us his medical diagnosis. He might have been wrong on that as well. So I want to see Rico Flores out there. But the one guy injured in July, Jadarian Price, I think he is a player we really want to see moving around at that first practice, or especially the last practice in April.
No doubt. I mean, that's always a big part of spring, because there are always guys that are out and you're like, what?
There'll be some of those we don't have no idea.
Yeah, that had the January, surgery cleanup type stuff. That always happens. So that'll be interesting. I mean, I'm certainly there will be guys who don't practice that are ones that we wanted to see to get eyes on. But that's a big part of it for me. I want to see how the offensive line comes out with the first group. Like, I'm assuming that it will be Shrouth and Kristofic, but who's to say with Joe Rudolph and, a different set of eyes, and how much that changes during spring, where the receivers line up will be interesting to me. And then, what the ones and the twos are on the defensive line, because I don't really have a great sense of what Notre Dame feels like they have when they want to go 8 deep, because really that's a position where you have 8 starters, not just 4.
I think defensive line is where I'm most interested to see just who comes out and where and when and with whom. But I agree with you, Pete, in terms of the guard situation. I think it's Kristofic, and until I see otherwise,
yeah.
If you ask me to name them, I would say Kristofic and Billy Shrouth. But clean slate for everybody. We'll get into that a little bit more when we get into the questions in the second segment. But Jadarian Price, I want to see him run around. Obviously, no contact for him, but
yeah.
Certainly he's in a position now, unless he's had any kind of setback, where he's going to run around and carry the football. He can do all the non-contact stuff. And Notre Dame fans may remember his performance in the blue gold game last year, which was impressive, not only running it, actually more catching it than running it. He didn't put up many numbers in terms of running the football, but he took that swing pass and went the distance with it from, 50 yards, 55 yards. So looking forward to seeing what he can do as well. But I mentioned to you guys, and I'm saying it to all of our listeners, you get a lot of questions about, what's the one thing that you're looking for? And I kind of tried to stay away from those questions, because I just finished the 12 part spring fling analysis that we went through over the last few weeks, and we're going to touch on all of those. For example, last year we came out of the spring saying we were pretty impressed with the defensive line. I think the defensive line kind of gets a bit of a bad rap, which I'll address with one of the questions in the second segment, but we thought it was going to be
better than it was. That's
better,
all. That's
better than it was. Yeah. And, you know, I think when you saw the game against USC, the way they gashed them, and apparently that was as much being out schemed as it was out physical from what we heard, what I heard anyway. So we'll see, but we're going to hit upon all that. We're not going to rank one over the other. It's just going to be on Wednesday. I've got the offense. Amelie has a defense with the dreaded five periods of practice.
I got a hustle. That's the what's going on there.
Where we're scrambling to see everything we can when, you know, half of that time is the running from one station to the one part of the field to the next.
I think I agree. I would bet a fair amount of money Kristofic starts with the ones. I think I would even take the field instead of just taking Schroth. Not that I wouldn't bet Schroth, but if you said Coogan, Carmody, I don't think it'll be Spindler, but if you said Coogan, Carmody, or Spindler, or you could take Schroth, I have just no idea if the redshirt freshman will start spring there. I do agree that the redshirt freshman will end spring at that spot, though, Billy Schroth. I just don't know what we'll see tomorrow. If he's ascended that quickly, because they liked Coogan, right? They liked Coogan quite a bit during the offseason.
From what I heard, even during the season, yes.
Okay, yeah, that would be one for me. And then Sam Hartman, I mean, when I say I've watched a lot of film of Sam Hartman, it's called watching television for 5 years. Every time you watch Wake Forest play, there's Sam Hartman throwing touchdowns and throwing the ball over the place. So he is not, excuse me, he's not as exciting for me to see tomorrow. I want to see Caleb Smith, actually. I feel like I had to go back and watch film of Caleb Smith because I recognized the name, but it wasn't the same situation coming in. So he's a guy I'd like to watch offensively as the spring progresses.
Yeah, all that. Smith, I'm interested sort of like how he fits into the receiver rotation, because chatting with people on the staff last year about him, I think that they were, once they watched the tape, they were a little bit more impressed with him than maybe initially when he hopped in the portal. Is he a bigger body that you play outside because he's played a bunch of football? Can he, move around and sort of be a flex guy for you? I don't really know. But he's definitely put together differently than the other receivers on the team. So I'll be interested to sort of how they try to use that.
In accordance with that, Pete, and Tim, you mentioned this in your story yesterday. Lorenzo Styles, it's clearly with the size now that they have on the outside, Lorenzo Styles would seem to be
in the slot,
in a perfect fit for a slot role.
Yeah, it would be weird. The only reason, they used Jaden Thomas there. Someone reminded me of that quite a bit. That was Reese liked him as a big body blocker and Salerno, but why would you not? If Lorenzo Styles is going to bounce back from last year, I think a fresh start is him in the slot. We kind of liked him in the slot as a true freshman too, when he would, yeah, when he would play there a little bit. That seems logical to me.
I'm glad you brought up Jaden Thomas. I think somebody tweeted at me a couple days ago about Jaden Thomas. Would they move him to tight end? He was tight end like many times.
Yeah.
What they did with him last year, especially as a blocker. So you don't need to, nothing needs to change. You know, the old days of, of X, Y, and Z, guys can line up anywhere pretty much.
Yeah, it's kind of blurred these days.
Really, a lot of times it is blurred. We'll see how it is in Jared Parker's offense. But with Tommy Reese, he was so diverse in formations and personnel and pre-snap movement that a guy could end up anywhere. But,
and I think you want it to be blurred, right? You don't want to be able to find, he's over there on the boundary. Yeah,
absolutely. But, there are specific roles for reasons, and boundary receivers and slot receivers. There are differentiations there, but it isn't always visible to the naked eye or to the average fan's eye watching it, pre-snap. So we're going to get into more spring football stuff in the second segment with questions, but I do want to talk about the men's basketball coaching search, which now is in full force because the three guys that were on the list, ultimately the list, Pete, you had mentioned Matt Lengel. I believe he's in the final three, is or was in the final three. Micah Shrewsbury was a name right from the very, Shrewsbury and DeVries from Duke, or Drake were Duke. Yeah. Can we get the Duke? Can we get somebody from the Duke coaching staff? No, DeVries from.
They already did that.
Can I? Yeah. Right. Yeah. you know, DeVries caught a lot of grief for them not finishing off Miami with 5 minutes to go in the game. I actually did not see that. I don't know.
Did you watch Miami last night against IU? Because Mike Woodson didn't even start against Miami last night. So it's like he was a 12 seed against a really hot team that won the ACC. The fact that they collapsed a little bit at the end, like I would focus more on the fact that they were in position to collapse. Like
exactly. No, exactly. Yeah, right. I don't like, so we're going to judge a coach based upon 5 minutes of basketball, like you say, in a game. And I didn't, you know, if they pick DeVries, I promise I will study the last 5 minutes of that game. I haven't had an opportunity to do that, but I have a feeling that maybe it was had a lot more to do with Miami than what DeVries did, but I didn't see it. And so everybody's entitled to their opinion on that. But Shrewsbury is the apple of Notre Dame's eye. It's going to cost them a lot of money if they want Micah Shrewsbury on their sideline. Pete, you want to speak to that?
No, the more that I've watched Shrewsbury and talked to people about him, the more that like that would be my number one guy. Not to the point where, like, if you didn't get him, it would be a disaster. But you get a little bit of the Brad Stevens magic dust there from Shrewsbury in terms of his background. I think the NBA stuff, but being a college guy is great. You know, the talking to people that you know are associated with him as staff, like very upbeat, energetic guy, somebody the kids really want to play for. It's going to be a while before Notre Dame is good, regardless of who they hire. But I think that's somebody that I think the fan base would be able to get behind the most.
I'd agree. And I think he would hit the ground running with recruiting the best of the trio at this point.
Yeah. I mean, because he's from, like, he knows the area, right? Like,
and just more of a draw, I think, for kids that are 16 watching basketball right now.
Yeah. Shrewsbury is born and bred and coached at Indiana. I mean, he was born in Indianapolis and spent his whole coaching career in Indiana, except when he went with Brad Stevens to the Celtics and then Penn State. You know, the thing about DeVries is, and one of our subscribers, McCormick88, points this out, and he's good every year. He's been every year he's been a head coach, he's been good. And so, you know, I'm not going to let 5 minutes of tape at the end of a game against an ACC, an athletic ACC team, and a tournament tested head coach, dissuade me from thinking that DeVries is a good prospect as well.
Boy, they turned away IU at every time IU made a mini run there. It was it went from 9 to 15.
Weren't you all over Miami last night?
They were. Yo, Miami looks so good, man. It was. I was not. I stayed away from that one because I liked IU. I liked IU, not against Miami, but I liked IU. I thought they had started playing better. Jackson Davis was playing. He was a good rim protector, and I thought that would be a closer game than it was. I was kind of disappointed in IU and also at Duke being a little soft against Tennessee. I was surprised by how soft they were in that game.
Yeah.
They got kicked out of them.
A lot of people were picking them to go deep in the tournament. I just didn't feel that way about it. And before we finish this segment, I want to bring this up. Tim, I tweeted to you over the weekend. I mean, whoever the coach is, could you, first of all, you know, like I'm watching Penn State play with Shrewsbury and it's like, well, yeah, you know, they're playing really well, partly because they have way better athletes than what Notre Dame had. I mean, just way better at, there's
way better,
better personnel on the floor athletically. And what Notre Dame, whoever the head coach is, you need to recruit some alphas, man. I mean, the only two alphas on the team the last 2 years were Prentice Hubb and Cormac Ryan. And you can say, I know, you know, Prentice Hubb played out of control, this and that, but at least those two guys, I mean, went for it every night. Wesley was too. I mean, that's ingrained in him.
Speaking of athletes that Notre Dame needs to have.
They need more guys like that, but they need alphas and they need athletes and they need a coach that, I mean, is going to find these players. Bray tried to play the closer role and that's not good enough. A head coach is not just going to walk in and they don't know you that well. And then you're just going to close when you're going up against some of the top teams in the country and the top head coaches in the country, and they're sitting in their living room well before Mike Bray would get involved with it. So, I mean, I think, you know, there's speculation about how quickly Notre Dame can turn this around, but it starts with a head coach that's just dogged on the recruiting trail and then getting athletes and alphas.
I will say this, Penn State, one of their starters, a kid named Keba Njai, he's 6'10" freshman, played at La Lu. So he was right there. You know, it's like, this is, they had guys that Notre Dame could have got on the Penn State roster all over the place. And Shrewsbury just did a better job of identification, recruitment, and development.
I mean, to add to what you're saying, Pete, there are guys on 50 rosters Notre Dame could have had.
You can't watch if you watched basketball at all over the weekend, you're like, wow, there are a lot of guys who really go for it and are confident in what they're doing. And Notre Dame had none of that this season. So it's all, and that's like at Drake, at Penn State,
at Princeton.
I mean, it's all over the place. You know, there are better athletes, obviously, at some other places, but
at FDU,
cohesion and just sort of like, except Purdue's backcourt, maybe not one of those examples, but a lot of other places, there are really good athletes who know what they're doing. So in some ways, it gives you more hope that Notre Dame could turn around more quickly, I guess, because
that is how I feel.
If you're well coached and go and confident, being one of the 64 best teams in the country really isn't that high of a bar to clear.
Yeah, you're right. And I have a tendency to look at the situation and everything is shaded by the way the program was run, especially in recent years. It should be something very, very different from that coming up. Last thing, just to clarify, you said La Lu, for those that aren't familiar with that, Pete, La Lemire School, where J.J. Starling came from.
Yes.
You're referencing the big man from Penn State was from there as well.
Right.
Coming back, segment two, burning up the boards.
Segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question is from a familiar name, Judge Arthur Vandelay. Which player would have the greatest impact on the team if they took a big step forward this season? And his examples were like what Asmar Belial did from his senior year to his fifth year. Maris Liafau, Riley Mills, or D.J. Brown? Let's go realistic step forward on these two.
Well,
that's a pretty obvious answer, right?
Well, it's an interesting question from the standpoint. There's one from each level of the defense. Yeah. And because of that, for me, it's Riley Mills.
Yes.
Mine as well. I would replace DJ if you're being realistic, because I think DJ Brown has played better than he has had some good moments, especially when Kyle Hamilton went out. But I would replace DJ Brown on this list with Xavier Watts, and that would make it a harder. I think Xavier Watts' ceiling is much higher than DJ Brown's.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But you know, I referenced this in segment one. I think the D-line didn't live up to our expectations, and yet, you know, they held six of their opponents to under 100 yards rushing, a seventh at 112 yards rushing. It was the Marshall game. It was the Marshall game and the USC game. And it was red zone defense, because they were like 13th in the country in limiting opponents getting into the red zone. So I thought, you know, the problem with the defensive line was it played well a good portion of the time, but not when it needed to, which of course is, you know, those are the money downs. And I get that, but I don't think that they're as far off as maybe it's portrayed sometimes.
Well, the problem is that this question, if the options were Riley Mills, Jordan Botello, or Xavier Watts, then I think you could have like a real discussion about like, all right, you know, if they went 3 for 3 in that group, then suddenly you have potentially a very good defense. If you go 1 for 3 in that group, then, you know, that would be a little bit tougher, but those to me would be the three guys on defense who are just like, if you can find the next level for all three, then you could really have something good on that side of the ball.
I could see finding the next level for all three of those guys you mentioned. Patel, Mills, and Watts too.
And how about Osafa Mensah too? I mean, I don't know how high his upside is, but I think
you have to be watching.
Malola.
Yeah, that's what I think. If he's like Adam Alola, you're watching. I want to watch Mustafa Mensah and be like, man, he's playing better than anybody thinks he is. When you watch a game back on Sunday night, that's kind of the way I view it.
The first time he did that was when I thought he played great team defense, which is frequently underrated. He's not a guy that's necessarily going to make a whole bunch of big plays, but when you truly play the position as 1/11th of the defense, it has an impact on the entire defense. And of course, you know, Javonte Jean-Baptiste is another guy that's going to be instrumental in determining just how good that defensive line is this year.
Top guy to watch, we did not mention, obviously, when we were talking about who we want to see in the spring, is Javonte Jean-Baptiste.
Yeah.
Because he needs to be, needs to be a player.
Well, I think right from the very beginning, he's going to be a presence as a pass rusher. It's how well-rounded his game can be to determine, you know, exactly how much of an impact that he has. Anything else, Tim, on that? Okay,
nope.
Sorry. Question from Terry Benedict. It's been rumored that Lou Holtz was able to get 1 to 3 kids into Notre Dame that normally wouldn't because of, quote, X reasons. What would it take for Notre Dame to allow Marcus Freeman to get 1 to 3 recruits in on NIL, in parentheses, acquisition fees, to come to Notre Dame?
Is the question asking that, I mean, Freeman has exceptions too. Brian Kelly had exceptions. But is it adding to those exceptions by saying NIL?
Well, I
think so. I think he's adding to the exceptions with NIL to go get more Sam Hartmans, but recruits as opposed to graduate transfers.
But we don't, my point is that, and Pete, I'm sorry, I'm cutting in here on you, but we don't know what exceptions Notre Dame gets. I mean, we're well past the Prop 48 days when it was publicized, you know, that Tony Rice.
Retrospect, we find out though who Brian Kelly got in. That would have been very hard to.
Exactly. I think it's blown out of proportion a little bit to try to make an exact comparison between Brandon Hillman and everything that's happened prior to this.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of Brandon Hillman. I was just thinking about players that get in.
No, I know, but I mean, that's what this conversation is. They've let players in before. Why don't they let Brandon Hillman in? Are we looking at the transcripts? Are we truly aware of the background of all these players and what Notre Dame has done? We are not. We aren't. And so I think when I see those exact comparisons being made, I think it's going well beyond our purview of knowledge on this situation.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a confusing question because it feels like it's two questions. Like
I think it's two questions.
One is a statement. The other one is the second part is a question. Like the NIL acquisition fee part, that would just be an institutional decision of like, this is what we're going to do now. So that Notre Dame could do that whenever it chose.
I mean, I think that will happen because if you're going to do it for a graduate transfer, you can do it for a freshman. As long as that freshman is a freshman that you have recruited thoroughly, that you know transcripts are great, like a person, it might not be
a good investment is what you're saying.
A good investment. Yeah, it might now, if this question could be a third question. If 1 to 3, the number's not 1 to 3, but let's say you're getting someone in that would not profile to Notre Dame. And it's giving him the NIL acquisition fee. I'm not sure how easily that will go over because that's not necessarily a great investment.
And I think something here, I don't know if I've said this or I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast, is that, you know, Marcus Freeman is hesitant about NIL too. Marcus Freeman is concerned about the impact of NIL on team chemistry. So this is not all. Look,
Marcus, I think everyone is, but you have to understand that's what you're dealing with until there's some type of regulation.
I agree, but there's some hesitancy on his part in just doling out money to this guy and this guy and this guy because he's looking at a big picture thing as far as team chemistry is concerned. I think we have a tendency to say the administration is screwing Marcus Freeman and Marcus Freeman's going to lose or is going to leave because of this happening. Now, do I think the football staff was very, very disappointed in Notre Dame's decision about Brandon Hillman? Yes, absolutely. I'm just trying to bring up the point that there is hesitancy at times on Marcus Freeman's part too, as we all start to go into the NIL world of just how that's going to impact team chemistry.
Yeah, it's something to be concerned about. But I think if you gave Marcus Freeman a choice of like, man, we can have more NIL upfront acquisition, recruiting forward, or I can be concerned about that, or I can be concerned about team chemistry. He would rather solve the team chemistry problem, right?
No, I don't disagree okay. with that statement.
Yeah, he would love to figure out how to integrate Keon Keeley into the locker room.
No, there's no doubt about that. I'm talking in big picture, broad. Yes.
Yeah,
broad
terms. I have so many issues with paying every player extra that's going to transfer out, or you're going to tell you don't want anymore. You just paid him money to be on your practice squad scout team for doing nothing. You pay some guys just deserve the scholarship. Okay, I'm going to say that. They have 93 guys. They don't all deserve NIL money. And I can't think anybody in the world thinks they all deserve NIL money.
I would agree with that, but I don't think that $25,000 per year for each scholarship athlete hurts Notre Dame.
I don't either. It affects my delicate sensibilities a little bit, though. That does bother me a little bit.
I believe that you have made that clear. Have you not?
I have. I'd just rather give somebody $100,000 for being good as opposed to $25,000 for transferring out.
I get it. I just want to point out that this is a NIL is still a universal thing for Notre Dame in terms of coming to grips with it completely, and that includes the head football coach as well.
Next question, Dio Carroll 1. I said that right? It could be Doc Carroll 1.
I think it's Doc Carroll 1, yeah.
Is the gap between Sam Hartman and Tyler Buchner smaller or larger than the gap last year between Buchner and Pine?
I found this to be a very interesting question because the answer is the gap's bigger between Sam Hartman and Tyler Buchner.
Yes. The gap between Buchner a year from now and like Pine in a year from now, I think would be a large gap. I think Buchner will continue to improve. I think Pine's ceiling, not ceiling. He could have the exact same type of year for a good offense, but he's always going to have limitations. Buchner had not scratched the surface yet of his ability until the Gator Bowl. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I said this last Monday that, you know, our impression of Tyler Buchner in the future is completely changed because of the Gator Bowl, even with the three interceptions and two pick sixes.
So it's looking Tyler Buchner is quite a bit better now than he was at this time last year. And yet Sam Hartman is way beyond that. So just look at that. Look at it as a tandem. How much better is the quarterback position for Notre Dame now than it was a year ago? It's just like, it's barely the same. It doesn't feel like the same sort of set of circumstances at all.
It's 20 times better.
It is.
Okay. You put a number on it. Thank you.
Yeah, I put a number on it.
I think it is 20 times better. That's a great point. And not like every national announcer or pundit knows the intricacy or the workings of Notre Dame's quarterback's room or defensive line room or whatever. But you imagine how often last year people were like, this is what Notre Dame has at quarterback, when they were watching the Ohio State game, the Marshall game. Seven of Drew Pine's 10 starts. No one will ever say that next year with Sam Hartman and Tyler Buchner. No one watching either one.
They'll say the same thing, but it'll be like, man, this is what Notre Dame has at quarterback. Just like the tone will be different. 20 times better.
And that's why, you know, I kind of fought back when, I mean, just as an example, Brandon Hillman doesn't come to Notre Dame. And there's a lot of Notre Dame is collapsing sentiment on Irish Illustrated. They have one of the five best quarterbacks in the country in 2023. Am I right? I mean, certainly the five most established quarterbacks
in the
country.
He's one of them.
Yeah, certainly they have a top 10 quarterback, which at no point did they have last year or the year before.
Yeah, a top five in terms of productivity coming in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Top It'd be hard 10, to be more.
Say. Well, I think he's top 18 all time, so he's definitely one of the top. That adds to it.
I was laughing to myself in the previous question when you described Nano Safamensa as being 1/11th of the defense, because last year Notre Dame tried to play offense with the quarterback being described as 1/11th of the offense, which just like drove me absolutely insane. That will never be said this year. Never.
The quarterback position's a little, you can't use the 1/11th equation for that.
The 49ers did that for a while and eventually catches up to you. Next question, Swarbrick for Prez. which is going to be different than another question we have about Schwarber coming up later on. Does Sam Hartman at quarterback change how you look at the running backs as a whole and their individual roles this year? Will Notre Dame value pass protection skills in their RBs more as they fight for time to get receivers downfield?
I understand the sentiment of the question because obviously you're going to do more in the passing game with Sam Hartman. But I think Diggs and Estime are,
yeah, they're established.
I mean, I think players. They're established. They're not going to make every pass block. But I think those two are pretty well established in that area. Chris Tyree, obviously a little less bulk, I guess, may not be quite in their category.
I guess they all had their moments where I was like, that wasn't awesome. Estime was the best. We have to give Diggs some leeway because he had coming off a shoulder injury. He had about six games where he probably didn't exactly want to dive.
No. Early in the year, there were a couple where you're like, whoa.
Yeah. I think that was reaction to not trusting it yet, though. Yeah. I remember Diggs stunk for 3 weeks as a running back, too, and then all of a sudden he was really good. He had seven carries for 7 yards against Marshall. He was pretty bad.
Had a DMP against Cal, if I'm not mistaken, yes. Right? Like
that was a self-imposed, I think, though.
That's what why I say it. It had something to do with not playing in a game in September, his performance after that. No, I get the question, and it's important. I think those guys are pretty good at, and Notre Dame's offense is going to be, there are moments in games where, okay, you realize your pass pro isn't holding up. And so you have to do a little bit more with the running backs.
I mean, Kyren Williams was obviously outstanding at times in pass protection. So that's a tough bar. Audric Estime, I think will be,
yeah,
it's a good question, but I don't think that's a problem for Notre Dame's players. They're veteran players.
Yeah.
And
it's an understandable question, but I don't think that it's going to. Boy, and we commented on how Estime looks coming out of the winter. Man, I saw him on campus, and he so clearly has changed his body, since the end of the season. I think it's pretty impressive. And it was impressive to begin with, but he's more chiseled and probably a little bit. His body fat, I'm sure, is way down.
I would view the running backs differently if Buckner was the quarterback. And I say that in the sense of like Hartman has played so much football, like he's going to understand where pressures are coming before they show up. So he should be able to throw his way out of stuff. Not that blitz pickup is not important with a veteran quarterback.
Think about setting pass protections.
Yeah, he should do. Hartman, he should be great at that.
Hartman should be absolutely great at that.
A quick segue, Tim, on Estime and Pete. Isn't it interesting? He's a unique player in that he was anointed before he did anything because of the way he looked. And all of us were kind of like, well, let's see him play first. Let's pump the brakes a little. And then it turns out people were right. He's a very good player. We pumped the brakes and we didn't need to. He ended up being good.
And getting better. I mean, and just getting started, really. Yeah. A question from the Irish Rover. How many additional transfers do you think Notre Dame football will take after the spring?
What's my over-under? 1.5?
Hmm.
I think we'll take one.
Yeah, what go is, under.
Under 1.5, but over 0.5, Pete?
Yeah, I think there'll be one. Somebody pops in that, like, and I please don't ask who it's going to be at what position. I have no idea. But, like, there's so much movement in the sport that somebody will come online where you're like, that would be good. Could be a fit for Notre Dame.
I'll go over since you just pointed out what I always say. There's so much movement. We have no idea. I'll say over 1.5.
And a reminder that we've thrown out many times that Nick McLeod came to Notre Dame in May of a couple of years ago. So that certainly.
Chris Smith came in right after a spring injury, which could immediately elicit a transfer. That's why we're going over 1.5.
Ooh, good call. That's probably the smartest way to view it.
Yep. Question from Murph 17. Jack Swarbrick has been at Notre Dame since 2008. What do you think his biggest accomplishment has been during his tenure, and what about biggest disappointment?
So accomplishment, I think, goes back to the 2012 range, and then again 2020. When 2012, being part of the playoff and allowing to maintain independence for 14 years, which is going to probably get down to that contract hasn't run out yet, but it's going to be usurped by the new one. And I think probably being at the negotiating table and allowing Notre Dame to be part of the playoffs still, despite all the changing dynamics of college football as an independent. And the other, so those are related things, but I thought COVID's year that he got them in the ACC for 1 year to save a great football season for Notre Dame when he could have been completely locked out was also a great accomplishment. So they're all kind of have to do with finding a place for Notre Dame in the Power Five landscape where they are not a Power Five program.
I would, while I agree with what you're saying, I think that his biggest accomplishment is far and away is the Campus Crossroads project. Like, I don't, there's not, to me, not a close second on that one. That redid Notre Dame's campus, redid like the stadium, what the stadium meant. I mean, it's like the largest construction project in Notre Dame history. And like Jack Swarbrick's the reason that got done. So not the only reason, but the biggest. I mean, I remember talking to Jimmy Dunn about it. And he's like, he said the only thing he didn't like about the Campus Crossroad project is it wasn't his idea. It was Swarbrick's. So that's that is a legacy. Projects don't get bigger than that one.
I agree with that. I had that written down, of course. I concur with O'Malley that the navigation through the pandemic, Notre Dame was as prepared for that season as anybody in the country, which yes. under yeah. the circumstances, I don't even know. I mean, you try to plan for that, but I'm not sure that with the pandemic that you know you can pull it off. They were a step ahead, and I give more credit to him as far as salvaging the ACC season than most people do, but he was at the forefront of stressing to the ACC to be patient because the ACC was about ready to close it down like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. And so they hung in there and it ended up being a great season for them. The Big East crumbling and then finding a home in the ACC and finding a home for hockey in the Big Ten eventually. I know we look now at the ACC and say they're underachieving in football and they're underachieving in basketball. But at the time in 2013, 2014, that was an incredible accomplishment to get Notre Dame affiliated with the ACC. You ask Jack Swarbrick and he'll say Fighting Irish Digital Media. It's now called Fighting Irish Media. But Notre Dame was a million miles mm-hmm. behind in that aspect. And he was insistent that Notre Dame develop a department that emphasized, a much stronger media coverage of Notre Dame athletics to the point now where we take it for granted every time they're producing some video or some promotion of Notre Dame athletics. I think his emphasis on athletic performance behind the scenes, the enhancement of that, you know, mental health. I think he's done some great things in that area. We take for granted the Irish athletics complex that the football team practices in. We focus on the Goog that hasn't been renovated, you know, and we'll get into the negatives here. The 12-team playoff that is going to come into play. Jack Swarbrick was the only school athletic administrator within that group that pulled that.
That was what I was referencing with. He went from the 2012, we had a conversation. He's like, well, this maintains independence for 14 years and crazy stuff happened around year 11 and 12, but it still maintained it. So that's an impressive.
He was literally the only athletic director on the ground floor of that proposal.
What about for disappointments?
Pete?
Well, I mean, I don't think football is... they definitely have not won a national championship. And I think that the PAC, you know, is as much as I think Notre Dame has improved from with Brian Kelly over the previous 12 years, I do think the summit of the sport is moving away from Notre Dame right now. So that, you know, is that on the athletic director? Not really, but if you're going to get credit for when they win like that, this is, there are some institutional things where Notre Dame has to like say, all right, how do we catch up to, we're trying to climb this mountain and you're telling me now the summit is actually 1,000 feet higher than what we thought. How do you figure that out? And like, look, there's, I don't want to get into like, I don't know that I'll just leave that on the field. That I think is a national championship in football while it feels closer than it did in 2010 or 2008 when Swarbrick was hired, to me, it still feels like it's kind of in the distance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, keeping pace with the rest of college football is extremely difficult now, more difficult than ever before. And can one guy accomplish that? Jack Swarbrick, it's hard for him to do it on his own. Mm-hmm. You said about the Goog. I mean, it's not Jack Swarbrick's not holding up the renovation of the Goog. But it's his job to keep prodding and pushing and finding a way for Notre Dame to be able to navigate through all this. And at this point, I totally agree with you, Pete, that the haves at the very top are pulling away, not just from Notre Dame.
That's the thing. It's not, there's not just from Notre Dame they're pulling away from, though.
Yeah.
Now, but, so there's five haves if you include Clemson, and I have to include Clemson because they won two national titles in the last 7 years, even though I think Clemson and Notre Dame are much more on the same path than Ohio State, LSU, Alabama, and Georgia. So there's four halves plus kudos, Clemson. You found a way to become one of the halves and win two national. So there's five. That's not even close to being fair. There's five halves, even though Clemson's coming down a little bit. I don't know who else is close to those teams, though.
Yeah, it's just you do have to acknowledge if you're Notre Dame that, like, hold up. The all-time winningest coach here left because he thought or knew that he'd have a better chance to win somewhere else. Like, that would prompt me to be like, okay.
Yeah.
We're all moving in the right direction here.
He did go to Michigan State or Michigan, though. He went to a team that won it.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not just that he left. It's that he left to a school that, like, he thought he had a better chance to win. Whether you believe that he does or not, he thought that he did. And, like, Brian Kelly, I think, has a pretty clear-eyed view of, like, what Notre Dame is and is not. That would give you a little bit of pause, I think, if you're Notre Dame, to sort of view, okay, where are we moving here? Are we following this pack or not?
Brian Kelly does have a better chance to win at LSU. He's one of the have programs in the SEC in the most powerful conference in the country. So he does have a better chance. I mean, didn't Brian Kelly always know that when he was in Notre Dame? Didn't he know that when he came to Notre Dame that the LSU?
I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to talk about what Pete said when he said it feels like they have a better chance of winning a national title than they do in 2010. I don't know if that's true, because I thought Notre Dame had a chance to win a national title 30 days before the Alabama game, even though Alabama was clearly a better team. And not since then have I thought Notre Dame had a chance to beat one of those teams.
Right. No, I'm in agreement with you. I don't know what I said, but, like, you and I feel the same way.
Well, the program's much better now than 2010 is what you were saying.
But yeah, the program is better, but it's just like the top of the sport has.
Right.
They also have gotten a lot better since then. And they were winning titles back then, but now they're better than the teams that won those titles. So that, again, it creates a conundrum if you're Notre Dame.
And the disparity is more. It's more on the NCAA.
That's really on their defensive lines.
Well, and that's why, Tim, I wanted to say that's why Clemson is one of those five, because they still continue to recruit very well along the defensive line. And when you can do that, that's a great, that's a great foundation. I'm surprised they're not better on the offensive line on a more consistent basis.
Huge tangent coming here. Disappointments are how the basketball program has been handled since the Elite Eight.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
I don't know when you make the firing, so I had to go. These years run together much.
Not 5 years ago. We keep hearing of
No. I had to look it up. Here's where you do it, because remember, they had a pretty good, everyday, solid basketball year 2 years ago. They made the NCAA tournament. They won two games. They went 15-5 in the ACC. I don't care how bad the conference was. They went 15-5, which is exactly what Virginia did this year. And Virginia was a top 15 team going into the tournament. All right. They had very bad luck the Bonzi year, where he got hurt and then Matt Farrell got hurt. And they were the 69th team. You cannot put that on Bray. There was no hot seat whatsoever. He had just come off Elite Eight, second round. They went 14-19, playing all the freshmen. You knew they were going to stink. They stunk. They went 20-12 in the COVID year. They were getting better, NIT bound, trending up. 10-10, gonna make the NIT, maybe would have beaten Virginia. It's still my favorite basketball write-up. They never got to watch the game. And the next year, they flat out stunk again. That is when you think to yourself, two losing seasons, 1 year would have been NIT at best. That's when a proactive AD can say, it's time. You're not recruiting at the same level. You're not, yeah.
No, I agree with you that he allowed the men's basketball program to be held hostage.
Of course, the next year, Notre Dame was pretty good when he held on to Mike Bray. Not a foresighted, oh, we have good players coming back. Let's try to go 24-12.
And then look at the composition of the roster this year. I would agree with that. The circumstances dictated that a little bit because of how Mike Bray was viewed at Notre Dame, but it happened, and now they're in a really bad spot, and they really need a coach that can pull them out of the
and it's probably not firing is the wrong word I use at that point, because you're a few years away from the Elite Eight and all that, but it's like, Mike, we have to change gears here. We have to change directions. This is not working.
Yeah.
What you're recruiting is not working. It's got to completely change.
Well, an emphasis on the program to the extent that the football program went through after 2016.
Right. Yeah, that's the best way of saying it.
Question from Irish HDL. With the guard position such a key this spring, why is Rocco Spindler not taking the next step to be a starter? Is it a strength issue, quickness, talent? Was it Harry Hiestand? It is interesting that Spindler's high school teammate, Ross Dellinger, who was lower rated, played significant minutes last year for LSU.
There's a lot of lower rated players that are juniors that play more than Spindler, but I get the comparison. But we have to quit. We can no longer look at Rocco Spindler the way we looked at him on film coming in. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, people are still doing that. People are still acting like he's
not that player. He's not who we thought he was.
Right. And we all liked him. Let's throw that out there. We all like Rocco Spindler. This is not hindsight.
Yeah, there are better players on the Notre Dame roster than Rocco Spindler. Also, it's Garrett Dellinger at LSU. Ross Dellinger writes for Sports Illustrated.
Yes, I was going to say that.
That was me. Yeah. That was me. Irish HDL just put Dellinger, and I thought I would.
Dellinger was getting minutes at LSU. Brian Kelly completely misevaluated LSU's national title readiness.
I also wrote Cole Kmet instead of Casey Kmet doing a baseball recap this week.
Yeah, it's I finally did the Nick O'Leary, Chris O'Leary screw up in a story last week. So that was always a matter of time before I referenced the former Florida State tight end as Notre Dame safeties coach. But look, Rocco Spindler just isn't as good as the other guys on the team. I mean, if Billy Shrouse starts over Rocco Spindler, it's because Billy Shroth is better. And Billy Shroth was a top 100 prospect who Joe Rudolph really wanted at Wisconsin. So I'm thinking that probably Joe Rudolph is going to be partial to Billy Shroth, just in the sense that that's a guy that he had to have on his roster at Wisconsin. So, I get it. Rocco Spindler was a top 100 prospect who's behind Blake Fisher in the class on 24/7, and that's it. Well, I mean, just if Billy Shroth is better, Billy Shroth is better. Billy Shroth was a top 200 player who I think is an absolute animal.
I do too. I think, Pete, though, people are wondering why Pat Coogan and Michael Carmody might be better.
That's
and
fair.
And Andrew Kristofic, clearly.
I mean, it's like there are four and five star, there are high four star prospects that aren't good all the time.
Yeah.
That's all the time. It's not, I mean, this is not a unique Notre Dame problem, but it happens at Notre Dame as well. So that Rocco Spindler just might be one of those guys.
And Rocco Spindler has a better chance. However, it wasn't a Harry Hiestand issue, because Harry Hiestand plays the best players that are really good. But Rocco Spindler did need a fresh start, and he has that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is not a Harry Hiestand issue, because you know what? Jeff Quinn was disappointed in Rocco Spindler too. Now, he was younger and had more time to develop, but he was disappointed in what he saw in him too. I just don't see the fire in this football player that is necessary to be an offensive guard at this level. I don't know why that is. Mark Spindler, his dad, who I was just starting in the business when Notre Dame was recruiting his father, went on to play in the NFL. I just think that maybe they're wired differently, because we've talked about this before. Have you, Tim, have you, and we don't see a lot of snaps in practice, but has there ever been a snap in practice? Maybe that first spring where you
there said, were some, yes.
There were some in that first spring.
That's a while ago. Yeah. You're right though. It didn't happen last year. He was in good enough standing to be part of the, Pete's going to laugh at this when I say that he was part of the special teams, the field goal unit. So it's not like he was buried. They did put him out there. I mean, you could have put any, you know, could have had Carmody didn't play. I mean, he was probably hurt, but he wasn't in terrible standing. He's just, I will be shocked if Rocco Spindler is the starting guard. I will not be shocked if anybody else is the starting guard.
I will mea culpa my way from now through the end of his career. If he starts, but I don't think Joe Rudolph is going to look at this any differently than Jeff Quinn and Harry Hiestand saw it. And I wish it wasn't that way, but we're just trying to be honest here in what we've seen and heard over the last couple of years.
Next question is Spider-Man 45. If Notre Dame did a self-study of what they did right and where they went wrong when recruiting top 100 players the past few years, what is on both lists? It seems like most fans would say NIL or acquisition fee for the latter, but is there more to it than that?
I don't mean to be flippant, but I would say they didn't sign enough of them.
That's pretty flippant on your part there.
Okay, sorry. No, I'm serious. Like, look how many top 100 players they really have signed. It's not many. I mean, we're talking like 2-3 a class. And Ohio State and Alabama or Georgia are like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Like, they have not signed enough of them. Because I don't think Notre Dame's hit rate is really all that different from those other schools. But when you have a hit rate on two guys versus a hit rate on 12 guys and the hit rate's 50%, well, Georgia has 600 top 100 players who really hit, and Notre Dame would have one.
I think it's a really good question. I'm not sure we've ever used a question from Spider-Man 45 before. I think it's a really good question, and one that has to be asked of Marcus Freeman directly. Because my initial reaction to it is, and I said this last Monday, that in the media, I think we have a tendency to look at something and ask, why did a coach decide that, as opposed to, oh, that's wrong. You know, that immediate jumping to that conclusion. My point being, I'm not sure that Notre Dame is doing anything wrong specifically when they lose out on a top 100 player and for the reason that Pete just gave, that Notre Dame only goes after a couple, and it's not like they've had a string of five stars coming into Notre Dame. It's very, very difficult to land them, especially now when you throw in NIL and trying to navigate that.
It's a tough, Pete, to your point, two top 100, four top 100, two top 100, one top 100. Those are the last few years. The 100 cutoff is pretty arbitrary because they had one top 100 player in Jalen Snead last year as a freshman. They had four in the top 120, four more in the top 120. So, I mean, you know, we always say, where's the four-star cutoff? Is it at 100? Is it at 120? I don't know where it is, but Notre Dame had five top 120 players in the rising sophomore class. If they had five and six top 120 every year, as opposed to 2, 4, and 2, that is huge.
Which they absolutely have not. Right. So it was a significant improvement in the recruiting, in the grand scheme of the recruiting class. It was a significant improvement.
Yeah, it's a volume issue. They need to have more classes that look like the one they just signed, but then they gotta make sure there's either a Keeley or Peyton Bowen in there too. You know, that's, I don't know what, I don't, I feel like Marcus Freeman, I wonder if he has enough sort of, I don't know, he's had enough sort of experience recruiting to Notre Dame to sort of know, you know, what's working, what's not. Like, this is a peculiar place. It's you're selling something totally different than everywhere else. So I wonder if, like, he will look back and be like, okay, this is what we should have pulled this lever instead of that lever, or it's more of just like, hey, we just got to keep doing what we're doing and then figure out how to close at the top with the Keeleys and the Bowens of the world.
How many more top 100 players would they have if NIL acquisition fees existed for Notre Dame with incoming freshmen. I don't think you can go back to 2022. How many schools were paying for incoming freshmen in Jalen Snead's year, 2022, which is literally just last year at this time? That was the freshman class. Clearly in 2023, it was prominent. Was it happening in 2022?
I mean, it's been happening since 1922. Right.
That's true. But I'm saying, do you think they lost many guys in 22 in that Jalen Snead class to NIL? They lost guys in 23 to NIL.
I don't know. I mean, it was a weird year. You had the coaching change year. Yeah. That's kind of hard to evaluate that one. But I think that is an interesting class to look at, because where was the star power on signing day of that class? It was all on defense, but it was specifically at linebacker. Mm-hmm. Who was the linebacker's coach? Marcus Freeman.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Marcus Freeman, it's the question everything era at Notre Dame. So I think he absolutely picks apart the process that they went through, where they came up short. Keon Keeley, pre-explosion of NIL, probably does come to Notre Dame, or they have a much better chance of holding on to him. I'm sure they look at, you know, did we recruit the right top 100 guys? I think they'll probably come to the conclusion that they did.
Yeah, you know,
the Dante Moore situation, though, I think Notre Dame would have to be did we get the right eval essentially the summer before that recruitment started to choose him over Vezina, to choose him over Jackson Arnold? I think in hindsight, that would be something where I feel like a full year into it, Freeman and his staff will have learned a lot about, like, okay, what are the markers that a kid is going to thrive at Notre Dame, is going to be receptive to our message? That may be something where I feel like they've learned a little bit in the last 24 months.
All right, we're going to wrap up with a question from Mr. Irish Red. What is the best possible outcome of spring ball for the Irish on offense and defense?
Going out on a limb, I think if Lorenzo Styles is the best player in the spring, according to the coaches, would be a pretty big outcome for the offense. Or unless it's Billy Schroff, then ahead of Joe Alts, then that would be the best possible outcome. No, if they say we know our guards, I mean, that'd be pretty good after the competition. Defensively, something along the lines of, we just signed the next Benjamin. We have the next Benjamin Morrison.
But he's a defensive lineman.
Yeah, but he's a defense. Something along the lines where you look at it and say, we have another Benjamin Morrison type coming to help our, because Benjamin Morrison really helped Notre Dame win games last year, and that was not part of our conversation last spring or last August,
because he was in high school,
or last August it wasn't part of our conversation, but he would win games for Notre Dame.
Mine would be Tobias Merriweather is a number one wide receiver, like the number one wide receiver. I think that would be massive.
You've given up on your man, TJ Jones here, Pete, Lorenzo
Styles. Kind of moving on to the next new shiny toy. Defensively, I think, you know, getting back to, I think maybe it was the first question, the Riley Mills, Jordan Botello. Both of those guys show enough where you're just like, all right, let's keep looking at the defensive line. Can we talk ourselves into the defensive line being as good as it was last year? If Mills and Botello have great springs, I think that we can have that conversation, but they got to have great springs first.
I don't think Tobias Merriweather will emerge as a legit number one. I don't expect him to, but he needs to hit the ground running and be a viable presence within the offense beginning this spring and heading into the summer and preseason. I'm looking at more like you want to feel comfortable about the pass connections. Like it can be Caleb Smith. That's fine. It can be, I'm not sure that it'll be Deion Colsey, but if he takes the next step up, you want to feel confident. Think about where we were when August camp started, and you know,
nobody would listen to us if the quarterback couldn't throw well and the receivers were terrible. Yes, that was a thing.
When we're talking about accuracy of quarterbacks and being shouted down by people that want it to be true, I think Sam Hartman will be that. And so you need to develop those connections. And then defensively, everything starts up front. And when you lose Foskey and Adam Alola, the pass rusher, that is, you want to see the Javonte Jean-Baptiste as a pass rusher, legit. Jordan Botello, there can be no more growing pains for Jordan Botello. It has to be right now. Pass rush and being stout in the middle, and that could mean Kiana Aina developing at nose to give him a little bit more depth there. I expect Gabe Rubio to be an even better football player than he was, et cetera, et cetera. But, the guards too. I think that
I have faith the guards will work out by August.
If it's Kristoffic and Shroth, they'll be like, okay, you've got something that you can build on there, and you're set at the other three positions.
It would take a very long time for me to get to offensive guard as something that, like, man, I really can't wait to see this during spring practice.
Well, we're not gonna.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking when I said Morrison, I was kind of thinking if you can have. People keep saying, is Clarence Lewis going to move to safety because they don't have enough safeties? That would be great, but Clarence Lewis was better than Mickey last year. So you need Jaden Mickey to be as good as Mickey was in the spring. You need Christian Gray to be better than both of them.
Those are two. Mickey and Gray are two real key guys this spring. I mean, if you the notion of another Ben Morrison, I mean, you don't want to sit around waiting for that because that doesn't happen.
But if you were to hear in August, we cannot keep Christian Gray off the field, he's starting opposite Ben Morrison, you would think, awesome. Whoa, that's good. That's a good thing.
That would be awesome. Well, we're going to return. We are going to go into a phase here now through the end of spring practice where we have two podcasts per week. We're going to have the opportunity to witness part of Wednesday's practice when spring drills open. We'll have a podcast on Thursday, March 23rd. We'll be taking questions once again from our subscribers and our friends on Twitter. And until then, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.